Mr. Pullen, reel 24.
But I know that the guns, you know, when I joined the ready, we had to escort the renowned to Scapa Flow. Well, I was sentry on the gunnery school, Wade Island. And about 11 o'clock that night, everything was quiet. And all at once, that Zeppelin came over. And I had 10 rounds in my magazine. I fired 10 rounds of live ammunition at her. Never hit her. And everybody in Stanley Street, the street there, Stanley Street, all jumped out screeching and all that, you know. In fact, some women come out in just their nightdresses. I hit one woman with the butt of my rifle, you know, trying to get up there to hit this Zeppelin. But as soon as I fired that first round, the Renown opened up because she couldn't elevate her guns on her. Then did her, this Zeppelin went over quite easy. And I know the commander of the gunnery school, he says, you just missed the VC. If you'd have hit her, Luxine brought her down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you were with the Grand Fleet, how much time did you actually spend in Scapa?
None at all. No, sir, we come in, go alongside the bumboat, and off back again, escorting. Out reconnoitering, you see.
Sorry, which was it? Escorting, reconnoitering,
no,
or what?
Reconnoitering, not escorting. We didn't have escort, nothing, see. We were looking around for, they say all the time, it was just around looking for the, trying to, in fact, we did entice the German fleet out of one, so many other ships, see. And they sunk a couple of our destroyers at the time. But I was in Azeroth when it happened. Mm. My sister was telling me. Mm.
Were you surprised when you were on the ready that it was so difficult to make contact with the German fleet?
Well, I don't think we took so much notice of that because we used to hear so much about it. You know, we heard that there was always two submarines waiting. It sunk there all the time, see? With the news, you know, the German fleet was lighting up and that, see? They passed the news through to our fleet.
Mm. I just wondered what the men felt about things when week after week, month after month, you weren't able to bring the Germans.
Well, all waiting, you know, all waiting for the war. Actually, all waiting for the battle to happen again after the Jutland battle. See, they were still waiting because it wasn't long before when we got back in harbour, the big fleet now would put to sea, and off we go escorting them. See, the 15th flotilla be escorting the. All these battleships and cruisers, and we'd be out for a couple of days, and there'd be a dashing about at night, you know. You wouldn't know what was happening, really.
Could you give me any idea whether the sailors, the ordinary ratings, what they felt about the Battle of Jutland?
Well, I wasn't there. But I was travelling in a train with two sailors that was in the Jellicoe ship. And one of these ABs said, we fired 8 rounds in that battle. Another AB said, we never fired 1 round. Now, you got that, same as I got it. Two ABs was in the same ship. Jellicoe, you know, hung on. They praises Jellicoe up, but Beatty was biting pretty hard, telling Jellicoe to hurry up. But he, of course, like they do in the Navy, they travel with the slowest ship. See, they don't rush out there and leave that slow ship behind. Jellicoe wanted all his ships there, see.
Yeah. I just wondered whether the ordinary ratings in the Navy after Jutland, whether they felt that Jutland had been a victory or a defeat for the British Navy.
Well, they thought it was both of it, you know, see. Both, because we lost so much stuff there, see. And I know lots of them blame Jellicoe for it. And I think myself that Jellicoe was to blame. And yet they praises him up more than Beatty. Beatty I put down as the second Lord Nelson, you know. I admired him, I always did. he had us all on board from the destroyers. And he said, of course, you know what you're there for, he said. As soon as the German fleet comes out again, he said, I shall throw you straight at them, see. So he says, you've got to know what you're expecting before long, see. Some of the married men was kicking up a disturbance about it. You ought to be shot and all that, you know, see.
Now, you said that the men thought that Jutland was both a victory and a defeat.
Mm.
And you said that they thought it was a defeat because we lost so much stuff. In what way did they think it was a victory?
Well, because of some of their big German battleships that were sunk, like the Derfflinger and that.
Mm.
And not only that, but it was said that when the German fleet put back into the canal again, the Kaiser went on board, and he said to old von Scheer, he said, you're going out to meet him again? He said, to meet that man would be heroic madness. Did you know that? That was Beatty.
Now, you were on the small ships at Scapa, so you were kept pretty busy.
Yeah.
But the men aboard the big ships would have quite long periods in Scapa itself, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's right.
What was life like in Scapa for the men who were serving on the big ships?
Well, I think it was rather dull in a way. Because after the war, we used to sing, you know, to some of them, swinging round the boy, swinging round the boy, you know, see? Because they didn't put the sea so often as we did. But what I think about it was that they were kept pretty busy. They had to be kept pretty busy to take the Charon off their minds. If they wasn't doing physical drill, they was doing something else. I used to go aboard the British flagship, you know, and we used to have catch hold of the telescope or opera glasses, and at the end of the place there was all the German ships in small models, like the Heligoland, see, a Baden class. And we'd have to name that because in action, you fire your own ships. Mm. And we used to know the difference in German ship by their funnels. Mm. Yeah.
You said they kept the men on the big ships pretty busy. How did they do that? How did they fill their time?
Well, I think they'd done it with the usual routines, you know. Meant off as requisite, cleaning and polishing and loading machine and gunnery all the time, you know, see. Every day they're doing what they call a spotter, and used to go at the guns, you know, and fire so many rounds. Every gun there had every day had to fire so many miniature rounds, you know, see? Into a box on the end of the gun, look, see? For the sawdust. Yes.
Did you ever get any information by talking to men on the big ships about what they felt about all this polishing and stuff?
Oh, if you did, they'd run down pretty badly, really.
How do you mean?
Their daily routine, come, just the same. They had to keep the ship up to date, clean, ready for war, ready for any time of action, you see. They were always on the alert, there's no doubt about that. In fact, many of them had nervous breakdowns through having to keep on the alert so much. I suppose, you know, in a way, they were kept pretty busy by their officers, but doing the odd jobs that they had to be done.
Now, the next ship that you joined after you left the Ready was the Marsh Fort.
Yeah, that's right.
Tell me about how you came to join her. What happened exactly?
Well, what happened there was I had just come out of hospital, and I was on night duty in the barracks when a commander come up, pulling just a chap, said, mystery ships, Q ships, that they called them. Plenty of VCs and tons of money, look, see? Come on. I said, all right, sir, get me off to this. I said, I'll come with you. Righto. He went to the drafting officer in the barracks. Drafting officer said, he's no good, see? Can't have him. So it went on, and over my illness, they gave me a light job. I used to go up the station and bring down these Derby men, you know, and they would come from Birmingham, Manchester, all them places. And I used to have to take them in and get them bathed in the barracks, and then take them in front of the doctor, then get them kitted up, you know, see? and all their old clothes they joined the Navy in, pack it all up, and take them up the station, they send the stuff home, see? Well, one day I couldn't go to this cruise ship, half a crown a day extra too, you know, see? And all at once, old Dr. Lightfoot, he said to the master at arms, "That's about the most miserable petty officer I've ever met. What's wrong with him?" He said he wants to go to them mystery ships. He said, "I'll talk to him when this is over." So he talked to me in a fatherly way. He said he'd go outside the harbor, it had blown up in no time. And he said, "What's the good of that?" He said, "For half a crown a day." "Well," I said, "I gotta die, I just wanna die there." "Get out of it," he said, you know. About 2 days after, he said, "I've been talking to my colleague," he said. "We thought we'd let you go. You ain't fit to go," he said, "but we'll let you go. Don't blame us if anything happens." I said, "Oh, you blame no one." I went straight to the drafting commander, and he said, "All right, go up to Baker's and Commercial Road and get your civilian clothes." All that to be civilians, no Navy whatsoever. You left all your clothes in the barracks, you see, bedding all. So I come down dressed up, you know, pair of nice shoes and tiddly socks and bracers and different man out the Navy, you see. So they said, "Well, we don't know you now, but you'll get your money from the Admiralty. And don't blame us if you're caught on this job, see. Right on. Because you're pirates now, see. Your ship now is waiting for you down in Portsmouth Dockyard, see." I went down and she was a one-funded Booth company, 32-year-old. Old lousy-looking thing she was. She was infested with rats and bugs. Never seen anything like it all your life. I'm not exaggerating when I say about the bug in it. And they built me a cabin on the men's mess deck, see? And they put a hooter there in case the sub was sighted, I'd be... Then they said, "Well, you might take your exercise up on deck," see? And they put a hooter up there, that too. So if they sighted a sub, you just press the button and I'd be ready, like, you know, to take my gun. Well, we had 2 6-inch guns, and they was submarine guns. You had to pump up air to them, you know, 60 pounds a square inch for their recoil. And I had to keep that pressure up, look, see? So every hour nearly I was examining it. And the first time I fired that gun, the pressure had gone. And looking through that telescope, you know, it can be all black eye, black all that, see? The second one was, they fitted her up with these heavy electric, put the same cell of electric lights in there as what they put in a battleship, you know, big brass. When I fired that time, down that common, split my head open, and the crew left the gun.
Could you describe for me where the guns were sighted and how they were disguised?
Yes. They were inboard, my two guns was inboard. The ship's side was all cut down, you see? And we had two wires there to lead down the stokehole. So that when we sighted a sub with it, going into action, I used to get here with a crowbar, see? And there was two men with bent bars there. And I used to shout, see? Push the lever over, and they used to run, and down go the side, see? As soon as they were that side, I used to pull the trigger of the gun and fire that round out of that gun alongside the ship. Well, that sub now thought now we were armed, so she tries to do a crash dive. So instead of being able to do a crash dive, she might get jam one of her men in the door. That this was all told me at the gunnery school, see, the little things that might happen and might not happen.
Now, the Marsh Fork, when you joined her, was her entire crew Royal Navy?
No, all merchant seamen, yes.
What size was the... How many RN people aboard?
RN, you mean the captain? The captain was a lieutenant.
When you went to the cruise ship, did you have to train the guns crew?
Oh, yes. I used to have them around there and tell them what happened, you know, you see. And they got quite used to it, see. Had a trainer. You always got a trainer, one there. He trains it either right or left, you see. Of course, you do the elevating and firing.
How did you find working with merchant seamen?
Well, pretty awkward.
Why?
They were mostly Liverpool Irishmen, and you couldn't do much with them, you know. They were obstinate sort of chaps to deal with. And they seemed to be very ignorant in a way. In fact, I had 11 men and I used to have to tell off 3 men at the time. Look out, wheeling gun. Well, the gun was a wooden one. And that chap used to have to stand by that gun, see? And if